We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
And welcome to the News Quiz. Even though it's my final episode as News Quiz chair, we've decided not to do anything special, so we start with the TV listing from BBC Two, read by former England cricket captain David Gower.
Cricket highlights from today at the Oval contains very strong language and some scenes of a sexual nature. It's changed.
Yeah. Our thanks to Mark Elms for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Hugo Rifkin and Lucy Porter. And opposite them, on my left, Simon Evans and Zoe Lyons. Hugo, which 11 want number 10?
Oh, it's only 11, is it? This is the question of which Tories are going to throw their hat in the ring to lead the party and indeed the country after the sad, sad departure of Theresa May. And the answer to that question of which Tories are going to throw their hat in the ring seems to be all of them. There's a huge number of people who are going for it. If we consider who we've got. We've got Dominic Raab, who's the sort of person who bullied you at school. We've got Michael Gove, who's the sort of person you wish you'd bullied at school. You've got Boris Johnson and Esther McVeigh, same policies, same hair. You've got Jeremy Hunt, who has a reputation for having a rude name, even though he doesn't. And Matt Hancock, who has no such reputation, even though he does. You've got Kit Malthouse, who once proposed the Malthouse Compromise, and now is the Malthouse Compromise, even though nobody knew what that was, and now nobody knows who he is. You've got James Cleverly, whose name doesn't even finish its own sentence. You've got Penny Mordaunt, prop forward Carrie Bradshaw. You've got Andrea Leadsom, who is not to be trusted with your Dalmatians. You've got the very middle of the road Sajid Javid, Javid Javis, as some people call him. You've got Philip Hammond, whose big pitch is that his entire party hates him. And then finally, you've got Rory Stewart, who admitted this week that he regrets once smoking opium, presumably because he now finds himself looking around at the rest of this unmitigated twitching horror and wonders if he might still be hallucinating. And they all have to pretend that if they win, the first thing they'll do is solve Brexit, even though they know the whole reason that this is all even happening is because nobody can solve Brexit. And worse still, the people who get to choose which one of them becomes our Prime Minister is the tiny fraction of 1% of Britain who are Tory members, most of whom still seem to think that electing a candidate who even wants to solve Brexit, who wants to make any sort of deal with Europe at all, is sort of tantamount to electing Rennie from a lower low. And so it's not all going to end well, Miles, if it ever ends at all.
Congratulations to Andrea Leadsom. I mean, it's quite an achievement in that field to be the worst candidate, but well done. She's... I liked... Was it Rory Stewart's, the little
yes.
one who's been popping up, inviting you to go and meet him? He's on social media. I don't know if you've seen this. And he's like, oh, I'm in Kew Gardens, right? And my kids saw that, and it was like a sort of rubbish version of Pokemon Go. They were like, oh, should we go?
Rory Stewart would be a really, really great leader of the Liberal Democrats, I think.
Well, he's like the one that people who aren't Tories want to be the leader and that no Tories. He looks like if you melded together every Blue Peter presenter from the 80s.
He's showing that video thing there, because he pops up and he says, right, I'm in Brick Lane, come here if you want. And it looks like he's sort of on the run, effectively. Those sort of people that get out of police jurisdiction and then film themselves, say, you can't get me now, you've got no extradition treaty. It looks slightly terrifying. Now, Simon, obviously, you're very sensible.
Well, I try and take a scientific approach. I have done some reading into the sort of background dynamics of this sort of situation. And, for instance, in the world of chimpanzees, the leader of the pack is very rarely the largest, strongest, or most obviously charismatic chimp. It's the one that's good at building coalitions. Some chimps are just able to kind of accrue consensus about their plans. And I think that's a useful insight. And I've had a look at the candidates, and the one that looks most like a chimp to me is, in fact, Rory Stewart. He just has the ears, so I think he might pull it off. You know.
But she's got 1 week left in number 10, hasn't she? What would you do? I think she's sewing prawns into the hems of curtains. That's what she's doing. She's just leaving little bombshells to go off here, there, mackerel behind the radiators.
I was wondering what, you know, if she now she leaves the job, what she might be going to do next. And I wondered if you could think of any jobs that were coming available, Miles.
No, I mean, if she's prepared to interview, they'd be mad not to consider her. I mean, she's got very, very cool head. She's clearly relaxed in front of people. She's got the time.
Can I ask, what's this latest with Boris and the court case, where a politician has been accused of lying? Well, whereas if that was extended to the natural end and all 630 were cited in the same case, that might achieve a solution.
You're basically advocating a cull.
Now you mentioned it, yes.
Yes.
Just give myself 2 points, thank you.
This is the race for the Conservative Party leadership. It's not a literal race, but perhaps it should be. Indeed, who'd say no to watching them all run the 100 metres while balancing John Bercow on a spoon? Rory Stewart admitted to smoking an opium pipe during a wedding in Iran, and Jeremy Hunt said he'd drunk a cannabis lassi while backpacking across India, which sets the trend for this leadership campaign being holiday-based drug admissions. Wait for next week when Mac Hancock reveals that he went to Bournemouth on a stag do and ended up with an armful of smack, and Andrea Leadsom tearfully tells The Telegraph about the time she took ketamine at Legoland. But who would have thought we'd arrive at the point where many people are looking at the prime ministerial candidates and thinking, gosh, I do hope it's the opium fiend. 2 points to Hugo. Lucy, for whom is the party over?
Yes, this is the news that Alistair Campbell has been expelled from the Labour Party for publicly admitting that he voted Lib Dem in the European elections, which, considering what they will tolerate from their members, apparently voting Lib Dem is the final straw. I can sort of see both sides in this, really, because on the one hand, fair enough, if you are in a party and you claim to love it, then you would think in a democracy the main way you show that love is by voting for that party, which Alistair Campbell doesn't see. It's like when I had a boyfriend who claimed that actually sleeping with other women just proved how much he loved me. bitter, I am. Didn't need to bring that anecdote in, but I thought I would.
Is he here tonight? Because he's in. Yeah.
It's David. One thing that I do find weird about this is everyone saying how they voted, right? Because I think it's a secret ballot for a reason, isn't it? Like my mum used to say, there are two things you do in a cubicle and I don't want to hear about either of them, frankly. Okay, yes, it is a bad thing to vote for another party, but given some of the people they're letting stay here, like Kate Hoey, we're saying that. Like
Huawei.
I mean, last time I looked, she was kind of surgically attacked to Nigel Farage.
I saw Claire Short on Newsnight, I think it was two nights ago, talking about the problem with anti-Semitism. A lot of people feel that there should have been more decisive action, but as she points out, the definition of anti-Semitism itself has now been broadened to include people who harbour a deep distrust of the Jews and what they're up to, and that makes things awkward, you know, if you're trying to keep a party together.
It's just another inconsistency, though, isn't it, from the Labour Party in that, you know, Corbyn loves a rebel. He is a rebel. He should be encouraging rebels. I mean, he voted against his own party on so many issues over so many years. You know, he should be out there. He's probably secretly voted Conservative for the last 15 years. That's what...
I felt quite bad for Corbyn, because you can imagine him, like, after he heard about Campbell, coming into the office the next day and going, guys, can you believe it? There are people who are like members of the Labour Party who don't want me to be Prime Minister. And the whole office just kind of sort of looking down. But I also felt bad for Campbell because I too have been kicked out of a political party. I was once kicked out of the Liberal Democrats.
Wow.
Quite a long time ago. They were having a leadership contest when they'd, I can't remember who it was they just got rid of. There was this joke at the time that why being the Lib Dem leader was like being Julius Caesar because you got stabbed in the back by men in sandals. That was it. But they had this leadership contest afterwards, and they were like falling like flies, the contestants. There was one who turned out he owned too many houses. There was one who was an alcoholic. There was one who kept saying he was gay and then not gay and then gay again, in that kind of way that Lib Dems do. And they all fed into this sort of narrative of, you know, Lib Dems doing things like having affairs and getting people's dogs killed and all that kind of stuff. And in the middle of all this, I was writing a gossip diary for the paper, and I found out you could join the Lib Dems for £6 and vote in their leadership election. So I did, and wrote about it in the paper. Then they phoned me up and said, are you going to bring the party into disrepute? And I said, do I have to? And they weren't in the mood, so they kicked me out.
Does anyone know what Corbyn's been up to this week? How has he responded to his disappointing election results?
No idea. Has he...
He's had a bit of a quiet think. He's pledged to support a second referendum on any Brexit deal. You're unconvinced by this?
Well, he'd sort of pledged that already. It's like literally the party's policy. But now he's just sort of pledged to eventually consider actually meaning it. Which is, it's just
Has
depressing.
He pledged to consider it or pledged... Is he considering it?
He's going to consider considering it.
Oh, that's you can pledge to consider anything. I mean, I pledged to consider doing the hoovering today. It never got done.
This is the Labour Party, who have expelled Alistair Campbell after he said that he'd voted for the Liberal Democrats in the European elections and for Israel in Eurovision. Deputy Leader Tom Watson said the party should be listening rather than punishing. Oh, someone's been to couples therapy. Tom, you can only speak when you're holding the talking cushion. Also this week, following disappointing election results, Jeremy Corbyn pledged to support a second referendum on any Brexit deal. A second referendum is very much the political equivalent of turning your computer off and on again in the hope that it will fix the problem, ignoring the fact that it's actually on fire and consistently printing out the words... and consistently printing out the words, help me. If the results of a second referendum are not conclusive, there would then be a third referendum, then a fourth, fifth, and a sixth. After the sixth, there'd be a period of reflection and national mourning for those we've lost along the way. Then there'd be a seventh and eighth referendum, and we'd be so into the groove by then that we'd do a ninth and a tenth just for fun. If we still hadn't worked it out by then, we simply put a pine cone on a windowsill, and if it opens, we leave the EU. And, 2 points to Lucy. Simon, who's not calling last orders?
Not calling last orders. Is this the nudist pub? No. I don't quite understand this reference, I don't
think. Right. I can understand it. I mean, how much thinking time do you think you should be allowed to buy?
I know where you're going. We're going with John Bercow, aren't you, who's refusing to resign or to step down. Last orders, okay. Order, as in order.
With your customary alacrity, right in
the
there. You've
dying
hit the nail
seconds.
On the head. Ram echo tetagistic. Extraordinary. incredible. A devilish display of brain work.
Would you like me to pick that up more cleanly on a retake?
No, it's completely up to you. I'll ask it one more. Go for it. We know where we are.
Yeah. This will be John Bercow, whose name I can never pronounce with any confidence.
I'm afraid it's a story about a nude pub, Simon. So close. No, please.
John Bercow, whose name, as I say, I can never pronounce with complete confidence. It looks as if it should be Berkoff or something like that, but I'm not sure. But all
it's
I know
Huawei.
Is... Sorry? Huawei. He has refused, or he has announced in any way, that he will not be standing down, despite having indicated over the last few years that this would be his final year. He feels that whilst Brexit is still sort of seething and unresolved as it is, it would be foolish to hand over to some ingenue who was unfamiliar with his determination to remain within the EU. So...
they want him to go after those bumper stickers were on his car, which... I found that really nostalgic. Do you remember when bumper stickers were social media? That was it. You could only get angry when you were driving really close behind somebody in front who had different opinions to you.
But of course, at this time of lots of concern for the environment, I don't think we should be encouraging people to get into cars, so I think people should tattoo their thoughts to them.
Back of their heads.
To their naked posteriors.
Well, it's not a bad idea. I walked behind a woman the other day in Brighton who had Carpe Diem tattooed on the back of her thighs, and I just thought, wow... seize the day. with your thighs. That's some undertaking. You need strong internal leg muscles for that. Pop the lid off a bottle
of
beer.
I have genuinely seen, it's called a tramp stamp, isn't it? In certain quarters, that sort of small of the back tattoo, and I have genuinely seen one which read, "Only the Brave," which I thought was... Bit of an own goal there, possibly. But...
I've had that one covered up now.
This is the impish John Bercow, who, despite speculation that he would stand down this summer, plans to stay on as Speaker of the House. Bercow feels that this is in the best interests of the country, seemingly confusing the country with John Bercow. While it's not for me to comment, it does make you think, what chance does Parliament have of extricating us from Europe if they can't remove one tiny man dressed as the Scottish widow? It's unknown what Bercow will do after he steps down, but as a man who's primarily known for being short and good at shouting, he could either be a rowing cox or a serviceable Greg Wallace. 2 points to Simon.
Thank you.
Zoe, who has finally accepted their age?
Oh, this is planet Earth has entered a new era, apparently. Geologists have voted to herald in the start of a new epoch. Apparently, we are now entering the Anthropocene epoch, which I had to Google that because I thought it was the equestrian-loving cousin of Jacob Rees-Mogg. Here she comes, Anthropocene, on a little pony. We are entering the age of man, apparently. That's what we are entering. It's a big deal. Apparently, geologists have to put forward their claim that we have left the Holocene age that we were in. Holocene age, I think it's called. Yeah, we started at the...
Huawei.
The Huawei scene. But apparently the Apothecracine epoch started.
Apothecracine.
Apothecracine.
People dress up as 19th century chemists.
It's the Apothecracine. It's massive. It's huge in Nottingham. Just get the little jars out and mix some stuff up. It's great. That's why Boots is based there. Anyway, so.
You're doing very well. I couldn't even do the epoch bit. I thought epoch, that was a little fairy thing from Star Wars.
It's quite... No. Basically, the Earth is old, right? That's what I've learned. But it's all got its little names as we've gone through. Obviously, we're familiar with the Jurassic period, which was about 214 to 140 million years ago. And now we're entering the Age of Man, which they think started in 1950, which seems really specific, considering the massive years of the Jurassic period. And the thing that they are saying has started the age of man is man's irreversible damage or impact on the planet, and certain key factors are the arrival of nuclear bombs and industrial farming of chickens. So it's nukes and nuggets have heralded in the new age. I think it's sort of depicted by just grown men on electric scooters. That's where we've evolved to.
I know backstage on this programme we talk about geology a lot. But
always.
But Simon, and you've always struck me as, in many ways, the biggest enthusiast. and you're angry about this.
Am I? Switching to improv rules. I am a little bit sceptical for the reasons that Zoe has outlined. It seems an extraordinarily narrow band of time to designate an entire epoch has begun, as I think it is understood. You know, the Owl of Minerva spreads its wings at the falling of the dusk, and I'm not sure that we've achieved that situation just
yet. I have no idea what you've just said.
It's a coded message to his handlers.
Is this about the nudist pub?
But it is worth remembering that nothing ever truly dies. Dinosaurs and the ferns and various plant life on which they fed at that time, of course, eventually sort of mulched down nicely, producing the fossil fuels on which we rely nowadays for oil and petrol and plastics, of course, which makes you wonder just how much of any given plastic dinosaur is in fact dinosaur. not directly relevant, but it's something I bring up whenever I have an opportunity.
Did you see this with the other fossil-related story this week, is that the United States have now renamed natural gas freedom gas. This was two of Trump's appointed officials who work within the Department of Energy sent out a press release about something fairly innocuous, but rather than calling it natural gas, they've called it freedom molecules and freedom gas, which they are sending to Europe, they're exporting to Europe in a bid to spread their freedom. It's just incredible. It just made me, particularly calling it freedom gas. It's what America loves to think of itself as the land of the free, doesn't it? And freedom gas. It's amazing to think that gas molecules could have potentially more freedoms and rights than a lot of women in certain states in the United States at the moment when it comes to their reproductive rights. It's doubly twisted because Rick Perry, who is the US Secretary of Energy, he's actually a believer in intelligent design, so he doesn't believe in dinosaurs the fossils being created by mulching down over millions of years. He believes that the Earth's about 6,000 years old and that God put oil there just as a sort of little prezi.
Rick Perry said an extraordinary thing. He said America is again delivering a form of freedom to Europe, and rather in the form of young American soldiers, it is in the form of natural liquefied gas. He's mad. This is the news that we humans have officially created a new geological epoch, the Anthropocene, meaning the age of man, after scientists voted to recognise the term this week. The epoch started in the mid-20th century when the use of agricultural chemicals and atomic bombs left an indelible mark on the Earth, and we finally started winning the fight against plants. It's our world now, plants. You're now doomed to a life at the garden centre. If you're lucky, you get a cower next to some decking tethered to a trellis. Not even Bob Flowerdew can save you now, you green idiots. This is the news that Earth is entering the age of man. So, to all the men out there saying, but when's International Men's Day? Here you go. You get a whole epoch where... It is so named because of man starting the irrevocable damage of the environment, but nevertheless, it is all yours. Ours, sorry. The scientists are now looking to identify what is known as a golden spike, a clear indicator of when the new epoch began. If you're listening, scientists, may I suggest David Gower's century at Lord's against Australia in 1989? I think we all knew things would never be the same again. 2 points to Zoe, and at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Lucy have 4, Zoe and Simon have 4, and David Gower has 2. We start round two with a cutting from the Evening Standard.
Archer earns a World Cup place as axe falls on Willy.
Thanks
that one in memory of Brian Johnston.
Our thanks to Rob Rouse for sending us that. Lucy, take a listen to this.
Satellites gone up to the skies. I watched it for a little while. I like to watch things on TV. Satellite of love.
Lucy, whose Wi-Fi is out of this world?
This is the news that Elon Musk, the world's third least popular billionaire, caused a bit of a stir this week with the launch of 60 satellites as part of the Starlink project to provide worldwide free internet. And they got mistaken by stargazers for UFOs. I mean, it's a good job it wasn't aliens, because there has never been a worse time for anyone to say, take me to your leader. Loads of people really like Elon Musk, and I don't know, I sort of waver. He's very childish. So the Tesla cars, they're the S, the E, and the X model. Oh. The spell set. I told that to my seven-year-old, and even he rolled his eyes and said it was a bit childish. You know, and the SpaceX rockets, I think that's because it's also got sex in it. I think the next Tesla model is going to be the 531-8008. I love that some of you didn't get that.
Millennials.
Millennials. Yeah. They don't know. You never turned a calculator upside down, so we'll be happy. Boobies. Anyway.
They always get carried away, these like tech billionaires. They can never just invent a better pencil. They've got, he wants to put 12,000 satellites into space. 12,000. He's going to basically fill up near space with satellites. And all the astronomers are very upset because they're reflecting too much light and messing up astronomy. But there's something nice about all these people looking up in the sky and going, wow, I wonder which like creepy, weird and odd life form is responsible for that. And the answer is Elon Musk.
So what you're saying is he's creating a sort of net in the sky, a sort of sky net, if you will, out of these satellites. That is pretty alarming, isn't it? I have to say I am torn because I do like Elon Musk's great ambitions. But on the other hand, it is quite nice occasionally to be able to get away from signal, isn't it? Occasionally, yeah. To have your kids put their screens down, you know, without you having to make them wear a lead sombrero.
I mean, you must have been amazed the day they finally came in handy.
I got them at a knockdown price. I thought, this is worth it, you know. The church weren't happy, but... I am quite nostalgic by inclination, by sentiment. I miss the days of dial-up, to be honest, you know, when you watched a picture appear in front of you like something being constructed on a loom. You know?
Even if there are 12,000 satellites providing Wi-Fi up in space, I still won't be able to get it in my back room. I know I won't. But I actually saw the satellites. I was coming down my street at midnight on my own. There was nobody around. And I saw this trail of lights in the sky. And I momentarily did lose my mind. I did, because I think of myself as a fairly rational person, but I was like, what the hell is that? It was just a stream of 60 lights all in a row. Wow. And it was incredible. And I thought, well, maybe it's a really elaborate wedding celebration where they've set off, strung together lanterns. And I was actually in the middle of my road throwing up bits of grass into the air to see which way the wind was blowing. And I was like, it's not lanterns, it's not lanterns. And I was on my own in the street and I almost found myself mouthing the words, they're coming. They're coming. And I ran home and I woke my wife up and I thought, if they are coming and this is the end of the world, I've got to be bold and do what I want with my life. So I told her I was leaving her and I shot the dog, and now I feel so stupid.
This is Elon Musk, who launched 60 satellites last week, causing reported UFO sightings to surge. Amazon are also planning to create its own network of internet satellites, which will help them locate your parcel when the guy from Yodel has launched it into a hedge. The event was caught on an edition of the BBC's Stargazing Live, with Professor Brian Cox dropping to his knees and shouting, "Finally, the prophecies are true." "You've arrived. Probe me, and I shall reveal the secrets of mankind. You'll need a torch." 2 points to Lucy. Simon, who ranks down low on the high street?
Oh, this is W.H. Smith, sadly, who I think for the 9th year in the row have been in the bottom two of high street stores, according to Which magazine, which, if I was W.H. Smith, I would probably stop stocking around now. There is a fairly easy solution. I feel very sorry. I mean, W.H. Smith have at least stuck it out, haven't they? If things carry on much as they are now at the moment on the high street, they'll be the worst, the best and the only shop of any sort of recognisable. It may well be the next Woolworths to go under because its business model has been superseded in most respects. People get their news online now. We may be moving into a brief season where W.H. Smith becomes viable when, because, you know, however much you might want to read the news on an iPad, they're hard to roll up to swat a wasp with. But there are the occasional needs for a newspaper. I actually, literally, the last time I bought a newspaper, I'm not joking, was because my daughter needed it in order to complete a recycling project for school. You know, the world is moving on. There was a time, I remember when I was about 11 years of age, W.H. Smith was basically like the internet. It was the only source of pornography, for a start, that we had in St. Albans. You used to go in there, and I never go for the top shelf because you get chucked out and banned. But there were always one or two interesting sort of paperback novels. There was one about a woman in, who lived in the Ice Age and made friends with a bear, and I'll leave it there. But You know, if you knew where to go, you could find curiosities like that. But that sort of stuff has gone now, and their business model seems essentially to rest upon persuading you to buy a bar of chocolate the size of a table tennis, you know, table that you had no interest. I think they must be basically funded by Big Pharma, insulin manufacturers, I assume. Not Big Pharma, the Top Shelf magazine, which they do still stock, but that's... Yes. It's an unfortunate homophone. But, yeah, I think they may be on the way out, sadly.
They do have some interesting offers, sort of buy, you know, one for a pound, two for £2. Yeah, well, fair enough.
Because the only place that they're successful is in airports, because you're sort of a captive audience and you have to use them. And, like, I went in, if you want to buy water, you have to have the Daily Telegraph. She said, I don't want the Daily Telegraph. I don't want it.
Rather remain parched and left-wing, thank you.
It'd be a great cartoon in the desert. Politically uncompromised water.
Yeah, I get very cross about this because I loved it when I was a kid. WH Smith was the first place I ever shoplifted. It's got, when I was two, my mum took me in. She said she was in there with me in my pushchair, and she came out and I was holding a massive gardening book. And she said, and I was like, oh my God, that must have been really embarrassing when you took it back. And she said, I didn't take it back.
No, it is very sad that a shop like this goes under, but I suppose in a way there is an inevitability about it when so many people steal from them. This is WH Smith, who for the second year have ranked the UK's worst high street retailer. The top five included John Lewis and Lakeland, so I think we know the sort of people being asked their opinion, and coincidentally, they're all in the audience tonight. Snob. This survey has been very harsh on what is, after all, one of the few constants in British life. Sure, it might not have the fancy glitz of Paper Chase or the thrusting dynamism of a Ryman's. It doesn't have the cheeky charm of a Clinton's, nor the solemn, ordered atmosphere of a branch of the works. But it's been with us through thick and thin. The Napoleonic Wars, the Boer War, the World Wars, Clegmania. In a very real way, WH Smith's is Britain, and I will defend it with my life. No, I do not want a large bar of Galaxy for a pound. 2 points to Simon. Zoe, who'd like nuts with their pint?
Is this John Burko? this is the story of a pub in London, a very famous pub in Soho, the Coach and Horses, that has just been granted a licence to allow it to have nudist evenings. Of course, why not? For so many reasons, why not? I used to work in pubs. Oh, my God. Oh, you'd have to bring your own towel, wouldn't you? You'd have, because you have to wipe down those stools at the end of the day. No. It's just not British, is it? We just don't. Like, pop it away. But they're doing this in an attempt to sort of stay independent and not have the big brewery take it over. And apparently Coach and Horses was the first vegetarian pub, ironically, in London, and now you can actually just get your meat and two veg out. It's just so many questions. I mean, apparently it's going to be on designated nights, which is nice, because I'm horrified if I walk into a pub and there's a band I wasn't expecting. Bad enough getting an earful, never mind an unwanted eyeful. And it's just so many questions. Where'd you get your money? I don't know. I mean, a carefully placed credit card betwixt one's tense buttocks, I can only imagine, which really brings contactless into its own.
It is a bold move. You have got to admire their balls, haven't you?
Really? Yeah. Pure balls to do this.
Does anyone want to guess where we're having our after party?
Yeah. Do people go there in clothes and then have to take their clothes off? Mm. Or is it your excuse for going all the way there naked? commuting there? Because they're always frauds, knew this, aren't they? They're always wearing shoes. It's not right.
That is the weirdest look of all, isn't it? That looks... Because living
nude,
in
but mountain boots.
Yeah, mountain boots, yeah. Or socks and sandals, but completely naked otherwise. It's because there's a nudist
cricket
beach
spikes
in Brighton, and that's
it's,
the look that they like to take
so
on there.
Down,
it's like
it?
A really yeah. predatory meerkat. It just... It's naked, but it can move over stones quickly. It's just...
Oh, God. You'd want to keep your shoes on, though, wouldn't you? Because I've never been in a pub toilet and thought, well, I tell you what would improve this, no shoes.
Oh. The whole thing's horror. I mean, imagine just popping in and just bumping into somebody you know in work. You know, like, oh, that's David, nice to see you. Can I get you a drink? Another short? I've once been on a nudist beach and it was the most horrific experience of my life. It was with my wife, we were in Greece, there was a nudist beach and she went, come on, so, you know, get him out, it's all right. And I was like, no, I don't want to. It took ages for me to, I finally got naked and I was really uncomfortable. I don't know if anybody's ever done it. And I was sort of settling into the horror that it was. And then out of nowhere, we're in the middle of bloody nowhere, comes this couple prancing down the beach who suddenly recognised my wife and goes, Cindy, hello, it's Wolfgang and Kristen. Friends of hers from Austria, they come bounding over. They're fully clothed. I'm stark naked, completely naked. And we had to stand up and shake their hands. And the only thing I can remember about it is seeing my naked self reflected in Crystal's massive sunglasses. It was every nightmare come true.
See, we once stayed in this sort of spa hotel in the Alps in Germany. My wife was writing about it. She's a travel writer. And we went to they had this lovely pool on the roof. It was full of steam and everything. It was lovely. And we got in it and we're swimming around. And you can see other people through the mist. And I sort of suddenly go to my wife, no one else in here is wearing anything. And she's like, well, it's just fine. It's Germany. My wife's German as well. She goes, it's what the Germans do. And I was like, right, but I feel really uncomfortable that I'm clothed and nobody else is. She's like, well, don't be. That's ridiculous. And I was like, no, I'm really uncomfortable. I'm going to take my shorts off. So I took my shorts off and chucked them to the side. And I was like, I'm much happier now. I'm like everybody else. And she said, you're weird. I'm going off down to the gym. And I said, fine, see you later. And I stayed there basking in communal nudity. And then gradually people started leaving and people started coming. And after a while, I went from being the only person who had been clothed in a swimming pool full of naked people to being the only naked person in a swimming pool full of clothed people, which is not what should happen if you're British.
Of course, Simon, conversely, you're very pro this.
Well...
And you've been, quite a vocal part of the petition to have these...
I do think, you know, London pubs, as a rule, are plagued by pickpockets. So...
Why not make them work a little bit harder for their money? Quite right, yeah.
The opportunity for misunderstandings, though, is obvious, isn't it? It's going to be the only pub in which saying, make it a large one, is actually an act of sexual harassment. Rather than a simple request.
It might lead to a whole
dry
new genre.
Dry roasted nuts.
Well, you could have the old, man walks into a naked pub, says to the barman, are these nuts complimentary? And the barman says, yes, they go very well with your penis. That'd work. It's my only sadness about this whole story, because, I mean, to me, any pub is a naked pub if you've drunk enough, frankly.
You mustn't listen to those people pleading with you to get dressed.
No, exactly. But the only sadness for me is that the pub is the Coach and Horses, because I wish it had been the Slug and Lettuce, because those are the nicknames that my husband and I have for our genitals. So,
of course, yes, it's incredibly flat green penis. Can't believe it, that was my final ad lib. Disgusting. This is a pub in Soho, which is... This is a pub in Soho, which has become the first pub to be granted with a nudist licence. The landlord of the pub has said they will hold regular events. Tuesday is salsa, Wednesday is the pub quiz, and Thursday is curry and your chap out night. The pub has been fully vegetarian since 2012, so if you see a sausage on your plate, put the knife and fork down. Oh. It's another example of the rank hypocrisy at the centre of British life. Someone opens a nudist pub in Soho and it's fine, whereas I open a naked, crazy golf course in a roundabout near Longleat, I'm banned from Wiltshire. But who doesn't love the traditional noises of a bar? The hubbub of chatter, the clink of glasses, the last orders bell, and the unmistakable sound of a clammy thigh being peeled off a faux leather bonquette. Truly, this is the country I love. 2 points to Zoe. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Hugo.
Yes, this is sent in by Ben Collins, and it's from the website of the Rockwell Inn in Exmoor. And it reads, "The East Lynne River is famed as one of the UK's best salmon and trout fishing rivers. Of course, this Devon bed and breakfast is popular with anglers. If you are lucky, they can be seen spawning in pebbly shallows."
Lucy.
Tim Shilston in Gateshead saw this poster when visiting the Liverpool Maritime Museum last week. "The Cruel Sea, free drop-in event."
Simon.
Noah Warwick in Vancouver has sent in a photograph of two posters in his local liquor store, whose adjacency is ironic. The first one reads, "Communication is key. Talk to your children about underage drinking." And the second one, "Say it with wine."
Zoe.
This was sent in by John Grierson in Cornwall, and it was a notice he'd noticed in his local golf club. It says, "Please do not spend too much time looking for your balls. You'll be holding up players behind you."
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final scores. David Gower has 2. Hugo and Lucy have 8, but this week's winners are Simon and Zoe with 9.
Yeah!
Before we leave you, here is an intriguing offer spotted at Essex County Cricket Club, sent to us by Tom Raffin.
"The players will be doing an autograph session after the game, so do come along to the pavilion and get your bits signed."
And with that, thank you for having me. Goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Hugo Rivkin, Lucy Porter, Simon Evans and Zoe Lyons. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news is read by me, David Gower. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Robin Morgan and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Catherine Brinkworth, Charlie Dinkin and Kat Sadler. The producer was Sarah Sharp, and it was a BBC Studios production.